welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dale, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today I'm going to ask one of the questions I get asked almost every time I give a presentation or speak with investors, which is, I'm thinking about starting a self-managed super fund. How do I know if it's the right decision? Obviously, everyone's situation is different, but to help answer that question today, I'm speaking with one of the best, Meg Heffron of Heffron SMSF Solutions. Heffron is the business that Meg co-founded some years ago, and it's been providing SMSF administration services for nearly two decades, which is a long time. A lot of people have joined the SMSF industry relatively recently, and they have quite a lot of experience. Two decades is something else again, right? That's a long time in SMSF years.
That's not my goal.
They've been doing tax accounting and compliance for thousands and thousands of SMSFs every year, so they know what they're talking about. They've also done my SMSF, so they've dealt with some people who, you know, should know better about lots of things. Meg's highly sought after as an expert in this field. She's hugely knowledgeable. She's one of eight people who formed the Cooper Review Panel into superannuation on behalf of the government a few years ago. She was the only woman and the only representative of the SMSF sector, which is a third of the market, so you had to talk on behalf of literally everyone in this area. Meg, thanks for coming.
Thanks for inviting me, Gemma.
So, Meg, there's not much you haven't seen over the years when you've been dealing with self-managed super funds. And we're going to have one of those conversations dealing with, you know, the trickier and more interesting elements in a future podcast. But let's start at the beginning. What sort of person tends to be thinking about starting an SMSF? You know, what's usually the catalyst in your experience?
I think there are probably broadly two groups of people. So there would be one group that are the people that set up an SMSF for a very specific reason. They'll have had some trigger or driver. Maybe they've read about borrowing through super and they want to do that, so they'll set up a fund. Or maybe they've just had a bad experience with an existing super fund and have decided they can do it all themselves, so they want to set up an SMSF.
Yeah.
But probably there's also another group which comes to the decision of setting up an SMSF more slowly. They're more looking at their super generally and saying, gosh, you know, that's a pretty big asset even now. It's definitely going to be bigger in the future. And in fact, I'll bet that even somebody in their 40s, I'll bet their super is their second biggest asset after their house. And so I think when you're in that spot, when you can see that you're going to be committed to superannuation one way or another, whether you like it or not, the natural desire to have some control over how it's run becomes a very sort of normal and natural reaction. So I think then people start to realise that an SMSF can give them that, and so look into setting one up.
I think that's a really brilliant way to describe how people come to the decision. My husband and I were in the second category, and we thought about it for probably 2 years before we actually took that first step, which might be a reasonable time frame or might not, depending on the individual.
To be honest, I think that's a great idea. Plenty of time gives you lots of time to do your research, to look into what you do and don't want to manage when you start running your own fund. So I imagine 2 years is not uncommon, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, so there's data that tells us that previously the vast majority of people who were setting up an SMSF that was recommended by their accountant, maybe a financial planner, but usually the accountant. And that has really changed over time. So we're seeing many, many more people saying that they heard about SMSFs through the media, they've done some research online, they've been talking to friends and family. How does that mesh with your experience? Because you provide administration services, not just on behalf of individuals, but also for accountants and planners, right? So you sort of see the full spectrum of where things come from.
Yeah, that's right. So funnily enough, I think there's a couple of trends. You probably see not only the increasing role of planners in that decision. So you're right. Certainly when we started, every SMSF that was set up was pretty much recommended by an accountant.
Right.
Over time, I think planners have played a much larger role in recommending the setup of an SMSF. But even more interestingly, the trend you talked about first, which is people educating themselves, talking to friends, talking to family, and then coming to that conclusion themselves.
Mm.
I wonder if one of the reasons that happens is because it's actually so easy now. You can do so much research online. I mean, remember when we started business, the internet really didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So these days, not only can you do all your research online, but it's actually very easy to then act on that research. You can set up a fund in sort of 15 minutes as long as you've got your tax file number and credit card handy using one of the online services. So it's not only easy to to do your research, it's easy to decide and then act on your decision as well.
To make it happen. So people are coming from all these different sources. What questions do you think they need to answer before they take that final leap?
Look, I think probably one of the most important things to think about is why are you doing it, and how much do you want to do yourself, and how much do you want to get help from someone else to do? People really need to understand what the help they're going to get is going to cost, so they don't go into it underestimating the cost. It's very easy to just look at the accounting costs and say, oh, well, that's pretty cheap compared to what I'm paying at the moment. Yeah. But if you're not intending to manage the investments, you'll need to get help on that as well. So I think looking at all of that before going into it is pretty important. I think the other thing is, you know, as an administrator, I'm always keen to downplay the effort involved in the paperwork side, because that's obviously our job. We want to help people with that as much as possible. But you can't completely take your eye off the ball with the paperwork. There's always got to be some engagement around the paperwork. You know, it's a little bit like going to your accountant at the end of the year and getting your tax return done. Even though the accountant might be doing all the work around preparing your return, you've still got to be involved in that to some degree. So you've got to be prepared to engage with that as well. I think I've sort of touched on this before, but a lot of people go into SMSFs intending to manage the investments themselves. And if that's the case, and that is a lot of the population, then they have to be prepared to follow through. It's all very well saying, I don't like the return my fund just got, so I'm going to put my money in an SMSF because I can do better. Nobody does better by accident. It takes work. So if you want to manage the investments yourself, you have to be prepared to follow through on that. Do the research, keep up to date.
Okay. So one thing, you know, I didn't mention at the beginning, it's a really good point to make, I think, for anyone listening. There are 600,000 funds in Australia now.
I know, and growing.
And growing very rapidly, right? And over a million trustees. So that's a million people, more than that, who have made an active decision to manage their own super. And it's not a homogenous group, right? They're all very different and have different approaches to it and want to do different things. So I will talk about my experience. We are just two people out of a million. One of the most surprising things that my husband and I found, we both work in finance, so we should know what we're doing. I talk about SMSFs for a living, is exactly what you said about paperwork and making sure stuff gets done. So the simple act of ensuring that your super gets rolled over from your employer fund or wherever it is currently, and then setting up the new investments. We knew what we wanted to invest in, but actually just making it happen took longer and took more work than we anticipated. You should know this stuff, right? But we hadn't thought about it a lot in advance. And I think you can't underplay that for people who are coming into this sector for the first time, as you say.
No, and look, one of the things you mentioned there was the effort of getting your existing money in to the fund. Mm. And isn't it funny, with all the major advances in technology we have, that process, that simple process, is still quite hard.
Yeah. You still have to do something, right? I think that's a critical thing. Nothing gets done automatically for you. It's a self-managed super fund, very literally. And so there are steps that you must take in order to get things moving. Once you're going, it's fine. We found it very straightforward once it's going. But the simple discipline of making stuff happen at the beginning, you have to be prepared for that. So one of the big questions that we get in terms of other things people need to know about, need to think about, is do I have enough to make it worthwhile? How much do I need to start one? Do I have enough? And then the corollary of that is, how much does it cost? Often the reason that people know there's a threshold to get over is because if you have a very small fund, the cost will eat it up pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
And so what are your thoughts on that one?
Yes, look, I think, and funnily enough, even maybe the difference between you and I illustrates how hard that question is to answer. So you went into your fund knowing what you intended to invest in and intending to manage that yourself. I went into my SMSF thinking managing my own money would terrify me. So I have an advisor, which immediately makes the cost of running my fund much more than the cost of running yours.
Yes.
So I think people often look at sort of 200,000 as a good benchmark in how much in sort of the minimum you need to set up a fund, and I guess probably the reason for that is because the costs everybody has, the costs you and I both have, are the accounting and compliance costs. So if you say that they're a couple of thousand dollars, once you get to 200,000 in total, you're looking at less than 1% of your assets, which looks reasonably competitive compared to the alternatives. Yes. I think that's probably why people generally land on 200,000 as a good estimate of where to start. Yes. But for someone like me, the threshold might be higher because I was obviously needing to pay for a lot more help than you were.
It's an interesting point though. So if you were in a public offer fund, another fund, whether it's an employer fund or, you know, say a wrap product or something like that. So if you went to a financial planner and they put you into a fund that you didn't manage yourself, you'd still be paying a planner.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That cost is not necessarily explicitly for the self-managed super fund. It's a cost for getting advice.
You're absolutely right. And I think it just makes the cost comparison a more complex exercise. Yes.
Look, it does. Yeah, absolutely. And that issue, the point you're making also is the amount of work you want to do also relates to the amount of work you want to do with tax and paperwork and compliance and all those sorts of things as well. There will be some things you must outsource, right? You must pay somebody else, and there are some fixed costs with just regulatory fees and so on that you have to pay. So there's going to be fixed costs at the absolute minimum that you have to meet, and then what else you want on top of that.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so there's no perfect science about how much is enough. I can give a couple of examples that I think are quite interesting. I actually have a young colleague who was very keen to start an SMSF with around $100,000. Now, the regulator would generally be very unhappy with a financial planner or an accountant who recommended you start an SMSF with that amount. They would say that it's not economically viable. But this was a person who wanted to do it himself. He is a very astute finance professional, and he felt that he could get returns that would more than accommodate the cost of doing it, because he wanted to invest in hybrid securities and a whole lot of other things that he just simply couldn't access through a public offer fund.
I wonder if also he was looking to the future.
So he's going, in 10 years' time, I'm going to have $300,000.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's saying, I'm 30 today, but I'll be in compulsory super for the rest of my working life. I'm a high earner. My salary's going to grow. It might even have been a smart financial decision for him getting in early.
Yeah.
Because, the sooner you start your fund, the sooner you start buying assets in that fund, the less the friction in moving. You know, whenever you move, you're effectively selling assets, buying new ones.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, good point. So for him, but he's an absolute outlier, right? That is not the average person. And then the flip side of that is you see people who have millions of dollars in superannuation, literally, for whom an SMSF is never going to be appropriate because they don't want the work. They're not interested in actively managing their own funds. They just are not going to ever be appropriate. So I think, aside from the cost, the other issue is what's your natural tendency to being self-directed and wanting to do it yourself. Again, coming back to my husband and I, my husband has very strong views about what investments he wants to be in and not. I do also, so it was very clear for us it was a good decision, but for other people who don't have that preference, obviously, stay away, it's too much work.
That's right, absolutely.
We got a sharp education in how much work it was when we first started. But coming back to your point about the $200,000, the regulator would sort of go that needs to be a bit of a minimum threshold for the average person.
So the government and regulators have always shied away from actually imposing a hard dollar limit.
Yeah,
in fact, it was one of the things we considered. It was one of the things we considered in the Cooper Review, should there be one?
Yes.
But the decision so far has always been there is no hard and fast, but you're right, 200 would be used as an industry rule of thumb on when it becomes viable from a cost perspective.
Yes.
Cost's not the only thing, but it's obviously a big thing.
Yeah, okay, great. So let's assume you've got sufficient funds to make it economically viable. What other things should people be thinking about?
So probably understanding enough, not everything, but enough of the rules and regulations to make sure they're not accidentally going to do something they're not allowed to do. Or even worse, discover after they set up their fund that they're not allowed to do what they set it up for.
Yeah.
So borrowing's a good example here. You've probably bumped into this yourself.
Mm.
We see a lot of situations where people have read about borrowing in super. They've decided they're going to set up an SMSF to do that. They have a plan to buy a property and then borrow to develop it later. And then they discover, unfortunately, once they've set it up, that they can't. So ideally, you would, if you have a specific driver for setting up the SMSF, you would make sure you were across the rules around that enough to make sure you could actually do what you wanted to do.
Yeah. So, look, that's a really good one. The developing one in particular, I get it all the time. So we're going to have a really good discussion about that topic in a future podcast just because it comes up always. And I think what you're alluding to also, if people only remember one thing, there's a sole purpose test for any kind of super, but an SMSF, it's far more relevant, which is it's set up for the purpose of providing for your retirement. So you can't get a present day benefit from it. You can't go and live in a property you bought in it. You can't rent it out to your kids, that kind of stuff. let's say you're across those rules, and we would strongly encourage anyone who's thinking about an SMSF to get across those rules, do a bit of reading and so on. What else? What else do people need to think about?
Look, probably like I mentioned before, knowing what you want to do yourself and what you want to get help on so that you can line up the right help from the beginning. I've got to say though, I think a really common misunderstanding with SMSFs is that you do have to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
I guess even the name is probably the wrong one. Self-managed superannuation fund implies that you are managing actively every aspect of your fund. Maybe it really should be called self-controlled superannuation fund, although I've not heard self-controlled and my name associated too tightly very often.
So it sort of implies that, you know, you go to the gym every day or something, which, you know, yes, it's not true of all of us.
No. But but I guess really what you're signing up for, and maybe this is the important thing, you're signing up to be the puppeteer. You're signing up to be responsible for whatever happens.
Yeah.
So either you have to be across everything or you have to make sure that somebody else is.
You can't abdicate.
You can get help from all over the place, but you can't abdicate overall responsibility for whatever happens in that fund, and that can be a scary concept for people.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we all lodge personal tax returns. Yeah. Whilst our accountant may have prepared them, we're taking personal responsibility for what's on that return. If there's a misstatement on that return, ultimately we're on the hook for that.
That's a really, really good point. Okay, so let's say you have thought through all of these things, you've done some research, there's really good quality information online, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Where do you start? How do you get going? So I've made the decision, I feel like I'm fully informed, I want to get going. Do you just Google?
Well, you know, for me, for everything from fixing my washing machine to...
Did you fix your own washing machine?
Well, I Googled it.
Oh,
yes.
I'm just going to call you. I'm not going to Google. I'm just going to call you. When I'm
so Google is my starting point for everything. Right. There and look, even it's probably somewhat blasphemous for somebody who works in this industry to recommend that you Google, but absolutely Google. There is some great information online.
Yeah.
Even the tax office has some excellent stuff. There's also you know some bogus material online,
yeah.
but Google is a great starting point. I think when you get down to the actually doing something, though, so Google is where I do my research.
Mm.
When it comes down to actually setting it up, though, I think what I would do is almost make the two decisions in reverse. Decide first who is going to look after you and help you long term, and then get them to either set it up or tell you where to go to set it up.
Yeah, okay.
They'll have someone. They'll have done all the due diligence.
Yes.
And so that is the way I would go about actually setting it up.
Okay, fantastic. And how do you determine then who's going to be the right partner for you? What did I say? I will disclose right now, this is very important, that NAB refers a lot of business to Heffron, both through our financial planners and through NAB Trade or through our website. And we do that for a very specific reason, which is that we trust that you guys are going to do a good job for them. So there's no commission. We don't pay you. You don't pay us. It's just simply a referral arrangement because we did some work to see who we wanted to partner with. And I will also disclose, which I may have mentioned earlier, is you do mine. So that's a personal decision, not a professional one. But not all arrangements look like that. So people, people will want to make a decision, as you say, about who's going to manage the fund for you or the bits they don't want to do or are not qualified to do. How does someone determine what looks like a good arrangement for them?
So probably... So start with any specific reasons that they're setting up their fund. So I know we keep harking back to borrowing, but it's probably a good example. If the fund is being set up because you specifically want to undertake borrowing within the SMSF, do your due diligence starting online to find someone who has good understanding of SMSF borrowing. Not everybody does. I think. Failing that, like in the absence of a specific driver like that, maybe the most important thing to realise is your potential partners can actually vary as much as the SMSFs do.
Mm.
So for some people, the very best partner will be someone that's all online, everything's in one place. Maybe there are even some rules around what you can and can't do within their service to keep the costs down.
Mm.
You don't talk to people, you just interact with computers. And that might be perfect. Mm. For other people, though, it'll be far more important. They can call someone if they have a question. They want to read useful articles and educate themselves. They want to get advice when they need it. So those two services are really, really different. Mm. So almost in your due diligence, you need to analyse your own needs first before finding someone. Just because I might think that a particular partner is an excellent one doesn't mean that they'll be right for you.
Yeah.
There's probably some questions you can ask a potential partner. So how many SMSFs do you advise? Give some idea of their depth of their experience.
That's a really good one, because I think it was the ATO anyway, one of the regulators came out and said the vast majority of people who work in this field only actually look after a very small number of SMSFs,
that's
like
right.
Five or something, which is not sufficient to get a really high quality understanding of the sector or what you need to deal with.
Look, they may be excellent accountants. It's difficult to see how they would keep up to date with all the changes in super though, which makes them possibly a poor choice for looking after your SMSF.
Yeah.
But the other sorts of things you might ask would be, you know, how do you keep up to date with changes? How do you let me know about the changes? Or am I on my own? Do I educate myself? Do you get your SMSFs audited by an independent business? How do you get paid?
Yeah.
Are there any restrictions I need to be aware of in using your services? Things I can't do or things I could do but would increase my costs?
Yeah.
And, you know, even something as basic as, what's your record for lodging Superfund returns on time? The tax office tells us all what our record is. So it's pretty easy to find that out, and it's a reasonable question to ask.
Yeah, right.
Yes. The good thing about SMSFs these days is we do talk about them at barbecues.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be a friend who's got a referral and can be interrogated a bit about what needs that particular supplier meets for them. And if you have the same needs, that may be perfect.
It's a really good point, actually, because, you know, people will tell you what's gone wrong or what's gone well, and
mostly they tell you what's gone wrong in your experience.
Yeah, very happy to tell you about that too. But yeah, people are very happy to provide a referral where something's gone well as well, so that's quite good. The one you haven't mentioned but I think is definitely worth considering, there is a self-managed super funds association. It used to be the Professionals Association, now it's just the association. And through that, professionals, accountants, administrators, auditors, financial planners and so on can do specialist qualifications in SMSF. And you can search on their website to find someone who's got specialist qualifications. It's probably worth considering having a look at that if you've got very specific needs, I think. So if you want to look at a particular area, you want someone who's got taken the time to go and get some additional qualifications, I think.
Absolutely.
So let's say we have worked out who the right person to partner with is, or the right group. I think that's really powerful. You got a plan, what you're going to invest in. You worked out whether or not you're allowed to implement that plan. They're not going to fall foul of the law, which is very important. You're ready to go. What else do you need to be prepared for?
Right. So one of the things people find when they first set up a super fund is the amazing number of questions they get asked. I don't know if that was your experience.
Thankfully, I was well prepared for that because I've been through it a few times. But yes, knowing that you need to have an answer for these questions in advance is very helpful.
Mm. Yes. And so one of the questions is what appears to be a really simple one. What do you want to call your fund? But it's funny. It's the very first question quite often.
Yeah.
And it stumps people because
they've
thought about, do I want an SMSF? Do I want, you know, who's going to be in it? And all those kinds of things. Mm. They haven't actually thought about what they want to call it.
Yeah.
So that's one. The other thing it's really important to be across or to have made a decision on is, what legal structure are you going to put in place to control it? So the people who control SMSFs are called trustees.
Mm.
You can choose a company or you can choose to do it yourself. Either way, you control it, but it's a different legal structure.
Mm.
And so that's also one of the important things we've done your research on first, so that when you get to that spot, you're ready to answer that question straight away. Otherwise, you'll fail on question two as opposed to question one. Then there are heaps of things to think about. Some of them need to be thought about straight away, but some of them can wait. So things like, where do people want their super to go when they die? What other super are they going to transfer into their SMSF from other funds? Because not everybody transfers all their super in from another fund. What insurance will they set up? Do they want their employer to start putting new super into their SMSF? What bank accounts do they want to use? All those practical things. And of course, with each one of those, there's a bit of paperwork.
Yeah.
So being prepared for that as part of the setup process is probably a good thing.
So all of that is very helpful. I know you've written some stuff as well about the questions you need to answer in advance. That's why I knew what I needed to think about. It was very helpful. So much to think about for people, but I'm guessing anyone who's listening and listened to the end has been through some of this already. Where do people go if they want to find out more about you and your service?
So probably the easiest thing to Google is to Google Heffron. Luckily, it's not a very common name. Or just go straight to our website, www.heffron.com.au. Or, of course...
E-double-F.
Oh, sorry.
Yes?
Okay. And then also, if you come to the NAB Trade site or nab.com.au, so nabtrade.com.au/SMSF or NAB Trade, both of them will give a lot of information about SMSF generally, so some different things you might like to think about. Got videos on there and all that kind of stuff. But also, if you do want to go through and get a lovely service provided by Heffron, you can go through that. And you'll get some information about Heffron by doing that and some nice fees as well. Look, Meg, thank you so much for your time today. I think that's been super useful for everybody. And I'm looking forward to discussing really, really interesting, more complex topics with you because you've got this extraordinary knowledge and they're things that we get asked about all the time. So if you're thinking about an SMSF, there are plenty of great resources out there for you. The ATO website, Meg alluded to this earlier, the ATO website is actually great and they've done some really good videos and things that you can look at. The ASIC website also has some great information and you know that that's trustworthy. They're not obviously trying to sell you anything. Or you can go to nab.com.au/SMSF. You can also go speak to a financial planner. There are financial planners out there who have specialist qualifications in self-managed super funds listed on the SMSF Association website that I mentioned. So if you've got a complex scenario in mind, that's probably a good place to start. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Gemma Dale, and I look forward to speaking to you again on Your Wealth.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.